Then you make reviewing this recording a priority of your next study session when you're alone. This will certainly enhance your learning capacity. Even though you believe you'll never forget both the mistakes you made as well as the proper way to speak the words, don't count on it. Your ability to retain all of this information in the situation is limited. And no, not because you're not bright enough. Rather, in this type of situation, your mind is reassessing and processing so many different things that not everything you learned in this session may get transferred along to your long-term memory. Once you play this information back on a recorder, you'll undoubtedly encounter something you had completely forgotten about. 3. Talk about interesting subjects. What's worse than being engaged in a boring conversation? Being engaged in a boring conversation in which you're still learning the language. I guarantee you that if you don't choose topics that fully engage you, two things will occur. First, you'll become incredibly bored with this conversation. Second, you'll cut the session short as soon as you get the chance. But by choosing a topic that you're already interested in, ideally passionate about, you'll discover that you can talk on forever. Not only that, but you'll be far less fearful about making mistakes. You'll also be eager to expand your vocabulary and pronunciation of new words. Fluency in any language is only possible if you learn the subtle art of listening. Don't expect to gain much knowledge if, when you do get a chance to speak in English, you're too nervous to listen or too busy translating what the others are saying to concentrate on the meaning of the words and the course of the conversation. We discuss this more in depth in the following chapter. Chapter 5. Improve your listening. Your fluency will follow. It's nearly impossible to talk about enhancing your fluency in English without talking about the act of listening. The two are intertwined. The only way to truly speak the language like a native is to listen to those who already speak it well. While you may believe you've been listening all this time, perhaps it's time to dig into what's involved in the listening process, especially the more advanced listening skills that every language student needs. It's actually not extremely difficult to develop these skills. If you simply keep your mind on the conversation at hand, then you're already far along in improving your active listening skills. There are many reasons to develop such skills, even beyond that of learning a language. Listening is actually a fundamental method of learning knowledge of any type. Think about it. When you were in school, you needed to learn how to listen to your instructor or your professor. If you didn't actively listen, you may have found yourself struggling in class. Active listening in a classroom setting means not only understanding what your teacher is saying, but even taking notes on the topic in order to take a test at a later date. Once you progress into the business world, you'll discover the ability to listen actively will help you understand customers, clients, and colleagues alike. It should come as no surprise, then, that active listening is an important aspect in learning how to speak the language. It's how you'll learn what syllables to emphasize in certain words, how to structure sentences, and how to make plural nouns out of single nouns. And that's just for starters. As you go along, you'll soon be recognizing idioms and colloquialisms, and before you know it, you'll not only be understanding them, but using them yourself. Tips for enhancing your active listening skills. 1. Face the speaker, make eye contact, and watch him speak. This is excellent advice for anyone engaged in a conversation. It's especially important for those involved in business. In fact, you may have already developed this habit if you've conducted any type of business in your native language. But this advice is critical to an individual learning the language. What do you gain by listening this way? Watching him speak will help you see how he forms words with his mouth, so you can do the same when you use those words. 2. Pay attention to what the person is saying, but stay relaxed. Perhaps this is the hardest advice of all when it comes to attentive listening and learning the English language. After all, you're going to be nervous. Just make sure you understand what he's saying. It's difficult to stay relaxed, but if you can do just that, you'll actually increase your power of learning. Mentally screen out all distractions. Background noises and movements of those around you are considered distractions. Once you begin to focus on what the English-speaking individual is saying, you'll probably find this comes naturally to you. If you do find your mind wandering, simply bring it back to the present moment and the speaker. Don't waste any time or energy belittling yourself for your slip-up. 4. Listen to the words being said and visualize what the speaker is saying. This is an effective way of immersing yourself in the language. It allows your mind to create related words and images and will help you with your ability to actually think in English. Not only that, but you'll also discover that when you do that, you'll retain the information longer. After all, what good is learning the language if you don't retain what you're learning? 5. Summarize what the other person has said. In many ways, this is the ultimate test of how well you understand the spoken word. But more than that, by paraphrasing and summarizing what you believe you've just heard, you're actually using all your skills in speaking. Speaking on your feet challenges you to think in English, something you need to learn in order to speak the language better. Beyond active listening. But if that's as far as you've taken your listening skills, then you're actually cheating yourself. You're holding yourself back from quicker, easier fluency in the English language. That's because there's a skill beyond active listening, and it's called extensive listening. If you've never heard it, then it's time you not only learn what it is, but how to use it to your advantage. Extensive listening is an amazing tool you can use in practicing your skills at listening to others speak the English language. Basically, it involves taking a topic and listening to it presented in a myriad of different forms. Recordings, videos and interviews, both live and recorded. If you had to make one change or add one thing to your learning program, including extensive listening would be the item. It's easy enough to start. Choose a topic that interests you. If you read the last chapter and have a favorite subject matter you're already talking with your language partner with, it could be that. The alternative is to select a different topic. Consider, though, how you can expand your language skills if you used the same topic for each exercise. Whatever topic it is, two things will help you excel at this challenge. The first is to make sure that it's a subject you'll be able to find a good deal of material on. Second, try to make it a topic you already have at least a passing knowledge on. This will definitely facilitate your learning. Once you've chosen your topic, then begin to research it. You'll be searching for resources that require you to listen. That means reading articles at this point at least is not a priority. Think YouTube videos, podcasts, television documentaries, and even radio talk shows. When you listen, especially at first, listen to comprehend the main ideas. At this point, don't worry about many of the details. If you can understand and repeat the important points of the topic, you're doing great. Choose sources, by the way, that emphasize the basic information. If you delve too far into the topic, you may discover that you become frustrated, especially if it involves the learning of a specialized vocabulary. Of course, the more advanced you are when you start this exercise, the more you can dig into the topic. You may find yourself discarding one topic and choosing another. The initial subject may be beyond your language skills at the moment, or you may find the subject matter to be easy depending on where you are in your learning. Keep in mind during this challenge that extensive listening is probably the most difficult thing for a language student to do, so be prepared to dedicate yourself to this technique. Not sure what topic to select for this exercise? Below are several general selections. You can begin exploring these to see if anything interests you. In the process, though, it's very likely you'll discover even more interesting topics you'd like to pursue. News stories and biographical information on political leaders and international sports stars. Reviews given in English of movies or television programs you've watched in your language. Thanks to the internet and the myriad of cable networks that the average person is exposed to today, this is an easy topic to research. From here, you may discover an interest in one of the actors or actresses and expand your horizons. If you're not quite sure where to look for listening material, try a few more of these popular websites. Spotlight English. Ello. Voice of America. Regardless of the listening technique you use in your English conversations, the point is to be involved in the present moment. It's difficult to advance your ability to speak English when you're thinking of your grocery list while the other person is speaking. Of course, this is excellent advice for everyone in a conversation, whether he's learning the language or speaking his native tongue. If you've been doing this and are still frustrated in what you perceive as a lack of progress, then you'll be interested in learning the incredible breakthrough technique in the following chapter. It's called shadowing, and in a moment, you'll learn why. Chapter 6, Shadowing. Pedro sat down for a cup of coffee with a friend. "I've hit a major snag in my ability to speak English," he said. "I've hit this brick wall and can't seem to break through it. I'm not quite sure what to do." The English student made sure he was talking to his friend in English. He also was attentive when his friend answered in English. "I know you're doing everything right," his friend replied. "You're being an active listener right now." "So what's my problem?" Pedro asked. "Perhaps you should try a technique called shadowing," his friend suggested. "Have you ever heard of it?" Pedro shook his head no. "If, like Pedro, you don't know about the technique of shadowing, you may be missing that piece of the language puzzle that will pull your entire learning experience together and have you speaking English like a native in no time. Shadowing is at least what this method is referred to in academic circles. Many others know it as parroting. This learning method was originally developed in Germany and then later in Korea. It involves the awesome power of listening with the indispensable power of actually speaking the language. It's an easy method to implement. You simply listen to a person who has a basic grasp of the language, and you repeat, to the best of your ability, what he's saying. You do this immediately after the other individual, or recording, has spoken, and you do this whether you understood all of his sentence or not. According to Dr. Alexander Arguelles, the developer of this method, it's best to be repeating the words while you're walking. In doing so, he said, you'll not only enhance your alertness, but increase the oxygenation process of your body. In fact, anyone who has ever practiced this will testify that there is something, they aren't quite sure what, about the walking, preferably outdoors, while you repeat what you hear. In fact, many individuals who have successfully performed this method describe it as the closest thing to listening to music and singing along. No doubt you've done this. Every time you hear your favorite song, you can't help yourself. You end up singing along. If you pay close attention to what is occurring, you'll notice you're singing the words nearly at the same time as the musicians. If you give this some thought, it appears weird, especially because you probably couldn't recall the words unless you hear the start of the song. Then all the words come flooding into your memory without much effort. It's the same mechanism working when you shadow. The peculiar aspect of learning a song is that you can go decades without hearing it or even thinking about it. The moment you hear even a portion of the tune, you're singing along with it like you heard it yesterday. All the lyrics come flooding back to your memory. There are actually courses available to get you started, but as you decide whether you want to use them, you may want to try this on your own. This technique isn't that difficult with all the amazing technology that abounds. You can listen to almost anything on your cell phone, take a walk outside, and parrot the words almost at the same time the recording is. You can do this without any material from recordings of speakers to audiobooks. It's easy enough to get started. Decide on the English audio you'd like to use. If at all possible, choose selections that have an accompanying transcript or, at the very least, subtitles. The nature of the material doesn't matter. If you have a favorite movie, by all means, choose that. You really couldn't get bored when you're watching and listening to something you enjoy. Perhaps you have a favorite television show, either a crime drama or a situation comedy. Some individuals recommend such sites as Power English Lessons. You may want to give that site a try. Prior to actually shadowing this material, you'll be wise to listen through it once without shadowing it to get acquainted with the content. This is especially true if you've never heard it before. It's actually a bit easier to shadow if you have at least a passing familiarity with the piece. The process of shadowing. Once you've initially reviewed the material, start listening to it again. This time, your goal is to imitate or parrot the actors and narrator as precisely as possible. The ultimate goal is to repeat everything they're saying. Ideally, you'll want to say everything they're saying at precisely the same time as the recording. If at first you're not that familiar with the content, you can wait until the sentence is complete before repeating it. When parroting the words, don't just say them without any feeling. Imitate everything the native speaker is saying, down to the precise pronunciation, the inflection in the voices. If you try to be perfect in all of this, you'll drive yourself stir crazy. Your goal is to try to keep up. The more often you shadow this material, the better you'll get. So instead of trying to perfect your presentation right from the start, just make up your mind you're going to have fun with this. Below is an alternative to this specific approach to shadowing, which may be more suited to your needs. 1. Start with finding a text at your spoken proficiency level in English. 2. Listen to this once in order to gain a general understanding of it. This is a great step that many students try to skip, only to find they need to stop and perform this ritual from the start, and this time listening to it before you shadow it. First, you'll know for certain if the chosen text really does match your proficiency level. Secondly, you'll discover if the topic holds your interest. There's nothing worse than trying to read something in a language that's not your native language and find it's, well, boring. If either of these is the case, too difficult or too boring, then go back and select another text. 3. Listen to the piece a couple more times. When you do this, you'll be sure to be confident in your ability to know what the text is talking about. You don't have to fully understand everything before you shadow it, but at least you know you'll eventually be able to figure it out. 4. If there are any words you don't know the meaning of, look them up before going any further. That's right. Before you start shadowing, look up the words you aren't positive you know. It may take a little more time up front before you shadow, but I promise it'll save you time later in the exercise. 5. Listen to the text at least once a day. Listen more than this if it's at all possible. 6. Pronounce the same piece until you can repeat it at the same speed as the recording. 7. Move on to another piece in the English language. Approach the second piece in the same manner as you did the first. Why walking and talking? While you're shadowing, remember that the ultimate way for this to work is by walking, preferably outside, while you're repeating the language. Don't overlook this seemingly inconspicuous aspect of this exercise. Why is this so important? According to some, and you probably have experienced this yourself, it's actually quite difficult to have your brain focus on learning a language while your body is trying to walk. Think back to when you were learning how to drive. If you were like most of us, the first several times you were behind the wheel of the car, you didn't talk much. You probably turned the radio or CD player down or even off as well. Once you conquered the act of driving, though, you felt much more comfortable listening to music or talking to your passengers. There's a good reason for this. It's difficult for the human mind to speak a language you're unfamiliar with and perform another activity. While at first you'll find this next to impossible, but don't give up on it. As you continue, you'll see improvement. Shadowing while you're walking is challenging your brain. It's forcing your mind to understand new language skills and eventually train your body to accept speaking this language as an automated process that in the end is exactly what you want, to speak English without giving it a second thought. The scriptorium method. At about the same time Dr. Aguelis developed shadowing, he also created a related method for learning the spoken word. This technique, by contrast, combines the power of repeating words out loud with the reinforcement of writing them on paper. It's called the scriptorum method, and you may already be unwittingly using it. It may even be a method you've used in your native language as a youngster learning spelling words. Instead of just working with words, you'll be working with sentences, at least initially. Create a sentence or choose one you've already learned. Get a piece of lined notebook paper and begin writing the sentence. Instead of writing it all at once, however, write it deliberately. As you copy each word, pause momentarily and say the word out loud. Then, and only then, can you continue to the next word. If, for example, you were using the first line of Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, you would use this sentence, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." Now, grab your pen and paper and begin. Write the word "it." Pause, and then say "it." Do the same for "was." Write it down and pronounce it. Write and speak each word in the sentence until you've completed each word. No, you aren't quite done yet. Not yet, at least. Now that you've written it on the page, say the entire sentence out loud. Pause for a moment. Do this again with the same sentence a minimum of 10 to 15 times. The purpose of this exercise isn't simply to recognize the words when you see them, but to actively speak them. If you want, you can now move on to another sentence. Some individuals choose to work from the sentences of a novel like this, although A Tale of Two Cities would take quite a while. Another option would be to copy and recite sentences from any of your lessons. This is a great secondary method of learning pronunciation, especially if the option of shadowing is unavailable to you. The aim of writing and pronouncing words, like in shadowing, uses more than one sensory organ of your body. By combining these organs, you'll be increasing the chances that you'll remember not only the structure of the sentences, but the pronunciation of the words. Use this interactive approach to the English language as often as you can fit it into your allotted time to study. You'll be amazed at how much faster you'll learn how to speak the language simply by writing and pronouncing your words and phrases once a week. In the next chapter, you'll learn one simple habit that just about all successful English students have used at one time in order to improve the ability to speak English and sound like a native. Chapter 7, Secrets of a Fluent English Speaker. If you've been struggling with soaring to the next level of the spoken English language, then you may have already been asking yourself this one question. What are those students who are excelling in this area doing that I'm not? And you're right to ask that question. That's the only way you can diagnose what you're doing compared to what they're doing. Here's a surprise. Usually, it comes down to one exercise. One simple 10-minute exercise, to be exact. This habit helps to thoroughly immerse these individuals in the language. This chapter explains how you can use this incredibly powerful tool to aid you in soaring to the next level of fluency in speaking English. Read a book. Yes, in English. Out loud. What if you knew that there were one simple exercise that could totally transform the way you spoke the English language? That if you participated in this routine every day for as little as 10 minutes, you'd be building your English speaking ability, not unlike an athlete improves his skill through daily practice. Imagine what it would be like to speak the English language like a native, without even the need to venture into any conversation with another person. If this sounds too good to be true, think again. You're about to be introduced to a simple 10-minute daily method that will do just that. Not only that, but this simple method can help you keep up in those conversations among native speakers who ordinarily speak so fast that most students get lost and even discouraged. Simply reading a book written in English out loud. Yes, that's all there is to it. But there are a few criteria that go along with this exercise. The first caveat is that you have to read the words as fast as you can while retaining proper pronunciation. At first, this may seem like you're reading at a snail's pace, but as you continue to practice, you'll find yourself getting faster and comprehending the words more quickly. Part of the key to this is the careful and deliberate pronunciation of words. Keep in mind that pronunciation depends on you to open and move your mouth properly. When you pay attention to the movement of your mouth, you'll be pleasantly surprised at the improvement in your pronunciation. Many individuals try this suggestion, but are, quite frankly, just a bit skeptical of it. They're not quite sure how reading a book out loud, to no one in particular, in fact, could increase their skill. So why does it work? 1. This exercise is doing nothing less than creating an aural atmosphere around you. If you're anything like the average student learning English as a second language, English is probably seldom, if ever, spoken in your home. This exercise, then, is an awesome way to practice speaking the language when you aren't in touch with others who speak it, even on a rudimentary level. Try to invest at least 10 minutes daily reading out loud 5 days a week. In fact, why not try it for a month? At the end of the month, see if you notice any changes in your fluency. 2. Reading out loud increases your opportunity for retention. Not only does it increase your chances to retain more of what you read, you increase this opportunity by approximately 100% when compared to reading silently. When you read silently, you use two parts of your body, your brain and your eyes. While this is good, reading out loud actually doubles the number of body parts involved in the process. This activity forces you not only to use your brain and your eyes, but your ears and voice as well. Scientists have discovered that this really does double your retention of the material. You're not only thinking about the language and seeing it, but you're also hearing it and saying it. There is possibly no better way to actually immerse yourself in the English language. While you're reading, you're actually subconsciously soaking up the thinking and speech patterns of the language. But that's not all. You're also enhancing your ability to remember in English as well as communicate in the language. 3. You're exercising your facial muscles. Yes, this isn't the most exciting result of this habit, but it is more important than you think. The sounds involved in speaking the English language are formed through the passing of air through a certain segment of our facial organs. As you probably already know through your studies, the sounds are then formed through the use of your lips, nose, teeth, tongue, and other facial features. When you're learning a new language, there are many new sounds you need to learn in order to speak it properly. At first, it may seem that you're totally incapable of pronouncing certain sounds. Many individuals, whose first language is Spanish, have a difficulty enunciating the letter Z in English. Spanish doesn't contain that sound. But just for your information, native English speakers sometimes have a hard time with the R sound of Spanish. This is not a natural sound for them to use. In each case, the individual needs to develop the specific muscles for proper pronunciation. 4. You'll learn how to become responsible for correcting yourself. You've been studying the English language, that you're already fairly proficient in the proper enunciation of it. Don't be surprised that as you read out loud, you'll slowly begin to police yourself. Eventually, you'll hear yourself pronounce one or more of the words incorrectly. When you first start this habit, you may slide by this. After you're established in this habit, though, you'll discover yourself, stopping and pronouncing it again properly. That's exactly one of the goals of this exercise. 5. Reading out loud increases your oral fluency. There's no way around it. Reading a book or newspaper out loud must improve your fluency in English. Ideally, you'll want to take time out of your morning to read out loud. And yes, I do mention this for a reason. This short, simple exercise loosens your speech organs, getting them accustomed to making the sounds of English. Not only that, doing it before class jogs your memory of the sounds necessary for the language. You'll soon discover that your fluency will be greatly enhanced on those days you take the time to do this exercise. One of the great things about this exercise, you can choose a book that actually interests you. Choose a novel you've always wanted to read or one of your favorite authors. If you're a sports fan, for example, then you could read an autobiography of your favorite athlete or merely read the sports section of the newspaper daily. Remember, though, that you'll gain the most from this exercise when you read actively or observantly. What do I mean by that? Be totally involved in what you're reading. Use your mind, taking note of not only the material being presented, but the structure of the sentences, as well as the order of the words in the sentences. Ideally, you'll transfer these observations into your daily practices, and the next thing you know, you're speaking English like you were born into it. Chapter 8. Idioms and More. You can't be fluent without idioms. Did you notice that title of this chapter? Yes, part of it is what's known as an idiom. In fact, that's probably one of the most common idioms native speakers use. The English language can be a struggle to learn on its own. Throw in an unexpected idiom or two, and now you've opened a whole new can of worms. There again is another idiom. Just for your information, opening a whole new can of worms means that in an attempt to solve one problem, an entirely different problem popped up. Even children who are native to the language have a difficult time learning some of the idioms if they've never heard them before. When I was a child, for example, and an older one at that, my mom and I were finishing up washing the dishes after supper one day. My father, who had gone into the living room to read a book, actually fell asleep reading it. The book lay on his chest. Mom said to me, "I need to take a page from Dad's book." I was horrified. "But Mom," I said, "that would confuse him to no end." My mother looked at me like I was crazy. She was using an idiom, and I was taking her words literally. I thought she was going to pull a prank on my father by actually confusing him by tearing a physical page from the book he was currently reading. As an avid reader, I didn't even see where the humor was in the act. What she meant, though, was that she was going to follow his example and take a nap. Knowing the confusion I had with several idioms, who knew as I got older that I actually confused my own child with one, I said to her, in all innocence one time, that something I did would undoubtedly get her dad's goat. She said to me, as if I weren't already aware of it, "But Mom, Dad doesn't have a goat." Now, as you probably have already guessed, getting someone's goat has nothing to do with stealing his farm livestock. What I meant by that was that I was going to agitate him, get him worried, and perhaps even a little concerned about something. But my daughter, like myself before her, had to learn the language one idiom at a time. How to learn idioms. Right now, you're probably thinking that an idiom is a secret joke that native speakers like to pull on non-native speakers and children. Who knows? Perhaps that's exactly how idioms did come into use hundreds of years ago. Now, they are common phrases that are widely accepted in the English language. Unfortunately, for the serious student of English, there is really no way to learn them except by memorizing them one by one. While there are really probably hundreds of them, I'm providing you with the meanings of the 10 most commonly used idioms in the English language. These are the ones you'd most likely encounter as you begin to delve deeper into the language. If you can begin by learning these 10, you'll probably reduce your confusion of listening to native speakers by quite a lot. You'll then be able to focus more on the other parts of the conversations you're listening to. 10 of the most common idioms. 1. A piece of cake. You'll hear this quite a bit. That test was a piece of cake, someone might say walking out of a classroom. That means that it presented no challenge to them. It represented, in fact, quite the opposite, something easy to accomplish. Another related idiom, meaning much the same thing, is easy as pie. Why anyone would compare a pie to something being easy isn't really understood, but at least you know now the meaning of both of these. 2. It cost an arm and a leg. That would be a gory financial transaction if you were to take this phrase literally. This idiom means the item being referred to was expensive. It's used nearly constantly in this language. In fact, you've probably already heard it. A second idiom with a very similar meaning is it broke the bank. It doesn't mean that the bank, whatever or wherever that might be, literally broke into pieces or that it ran out of money. The phrase just means the cost of the item was quite expensive. In both of these cases, many times the implication is that the cost is more than what the item is worth. 3. Break a leg. Believe it or not, this idiom means good luck. It's especially used backstage in theaters just prior to actors going on stage. It's considered bad luck to say the phrase good luck backstage, but apparently it's all right to wish someone to break a bone. It's widely used outside of this venue as well. So the next time someone tells you to break a leg, they really aren't hoping you trip and fall. 4. Let the cat out of the bag. Here's another curious phrase. After all, who would place a perfectly good cat in the bag in the first place? And who would care if the cat got out? This phrase's true meaning, though, is to reveal something that was meant to be kept a secret. When someone tells you something and you inadvertently tell another, you're letting the cat out of the bag. 5. Hit the books. Idioms can certainly conjure up some bizarre images in the minds of those who aren't native speakers. Upon first hearing this, perhaps you had an image of students surrounding themselves with the textbooks they like least and physically punching and hitting them. What a strange way of releasing your anger. This phrase is really synonymous with the act of studying. Yes, it's that simple. Not nearly as colorful, though. 6. Hit the nail on the head. When you hear this one, you may believe you're speaking to a carpenter, but that's not necessarily so. In fact, chances are good the person who uttered this expression has never even used a hammer in his life. Once again, like with all good idioms, it hasn't a single thing to do with the physical item it's referring to. Instead, it has everything to do with performing a right move, action, or even the proper interpretation of a fact or statistic. At least with this idiom, it's nearly understandable how it might have got its start. When you take a hammer and hit the nail on the nail glides perfectly into the wood. With the idiom, you've done everything right. 7. To scratch someone else's back. You may also hear this phrase as, you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. This doesn't mean that you'll be literally standing behind someone asking them exactly where the back itches, and then he'll do the same for you. Although implied in this literal interpretation is that both individuals are helping the other. This often used idiom means that if you help your friend with a problem or out of a tight situation, he'll return the favor when you need something done. 8. When pigs fly. Can you imagine anything more ridiculous than looking up in the sky and seeing a pig fly? They definitely weren't designed with flight in mind, regardless of how they may evolve in the future. So just the idea of pigs flying is utterly ridiculous. And there you have it. That's the entire point of this idiom. When pigs fly refers to an event that is highly unlikely, if ever, to occur. 9. Bite off more than you can chew. Do you recognize this idiom from the title of this chapter? While it has nothing to do with eating, with a little thought, you might be able to figure it out. Imagine you're starved and have been waiting in a restaurant for a meal that's more than a little late. By the time you get your sandwich, you grab it and take a huge bite. Unfortunately, it's a bit more than your mouth can handle, and you find it extremely difficult to deal with this situation in a polite and mannered fashion. While this has absolutely nothing to do with food, it has everything to do with your trying to attempt a feat that is just a bit beyond your capabilities. If you've ever volunteered to perform a project for work, only to discover you don't have the knowledge or skill to complete it, then you've bitten off more than you can chew. You've taken on a project that is just too large or beyond your capability to handle at the moment. Homophones, homonyms, and homographs. Just when you think the English language can't get any more difficult to understand, someone has to start talking about homophones, homonyms, and homographs. It's bad enough that each of these words sound and look so similar. Just wait until you discover what each word represents. Learning about these categories of words alone will convince you, if you need any more evidence, that the English language is not the easiest language to learn. So what are they, and why in the world should you even learn them? Let's tackle them one by one. A homophone, also called a homonym, is a word that has at least two distinct, usually unrelated meanings, but are pronounced the same in each situation. Sometimes they have the same spelling, but not necessarily. What do we mean by that? Look at the word rose. The rose bloomed today. Used in this sentence, you know that the word is referring to a flower. But in the sentence, Diana rose from her nap, means something entirely different, even though they are the same word spelled the same way. When you read these words and sentences, you're likely to immediately know the meaning intended. When you and others use them as part of the spoken language, you may have to listen closely to know what the word means in the context that it's used. The use of all types of homophones in the English language is just another good argument for something we talked about earlier in the book, learning to recognize phrases instead of just words. If you only learned words singly in your early years of language study, you may be puzzled by the use of the word rose in either of those sentences. Depending on what you learned, you may very well be picturing a flower when a person said rose instead of the verb meaning to get up. As you progress in your study, you'll recognize more and more of these. Here is just a small sampling of homophones. Lax, L-A-C-K-S, to be without something. Lax, L-A-X, not strict. C, S-E-E. To use your eyes. C-S-E-A, a body of water. Erie, E-R-I-E, one of the Great Lakes in the Midwest of the U.S. Erie, E-E-R-I-E, a strange feeling, usually referring to something that is paranormal. Vein, V-E-I-N, blood vessels of mammals. Vein, V-A-I-N, to attempt something but have it not mean anything. Male, M-A-L-E, a man. Male, M-A-I-L, letters that are delivered by the post office. On to homographs. If you're not confused enough already, you just may be after you learn about words that are commonly called homographs. These words, more likely a pair of words, are normally spelled identically. The catch is that they mean something different depending on their pronunciation. Again, these belong to a class that you'll discover as you continue speaking the English language, test not only your skills, but your patience as well. Sometimes the pair of homographs are pronounced differently. The difference, however, is a subtle one. It's usually just a matter of the placement of the accent in the syllables that make up the word. One thing you may want to know is that there exists an entire class of homographs that end in the three letters A, T, E. When they are pronounced one way, they have one meaning, and when you shift the accented syllable, they mean something else. A classic example of this is the word A, D, V, O, C, A, T, E, advocate or advocate. When you pronounce it with the long A sound, the meaning of the word is to be in support of something. When the word is pronounced with the short A sound, the word means a person who either supports or acts on behalf of the cause of another individual. Unfortunately for the student of the English language, these words are strewn all around. You'll never know where or when you might encounter them. But as you progress in your ability to speak the language, you'll discover that you'll become much more familiar with them and recognize them when you both read and listen to the language. Below are just a few of the more common homographs you may encounter in your studies. Attribute, a characteristic or quality of something. Attribute, to assign a characteristic to a specific person, place, or thing. Axes, the plural of the noun axe. Axes, the plural of the noun axis. Bass, a deep tone, or bass, a type of fish. Bat, a piece of equipment used to hit a baseball, or bat, the winged mammal. Compact, something small, or compact, to make something small. Compact also refers to a case that holds makeup. Additionally, you'll occasionally find this word meaning agreement or covenant, as in the historic Mayflower Compact. Compound, something created from more than one substance, or compound, an enclosed area that includes at least one building. Content, satisfied, or content, something that is found in an enclosed case. It also means the words found in books or other material. Desert, an arid, dry place, or desert, to leave someone behind. Not to be confused with dessert, D-E-S-S-E-R-T, which is a sweet after-dinner treat. Does, a form of the verb do, or does, the plural of doe, a female deer. Down, the opposite of up, or down, soft, young feathers of birds. Entrance, the area in which you enter a room, or entrance, to bewitch or delight an individual. Fine, sharp or very thin, or fine, the penalty you pay. Lead, to take a group behind you and then show them the way, or lead, a type of metal. Minute, 60 seconds or a portion of an hour. Object, another word for anything you can see or touch, or object, to speak up against something. Produce, fresh fruits and vegetables, as in the produce department of a grocery store, or produce, to create something. Refuse, a verb meaning to decline something, or refuse, a noun referring to garbage or waste. Row, a fight, or row, to move a boat with oars. Second, a portion of a minute, or second, the item after the first. Tear, the water that comes from the eyes, or tear, to rip. Wind, moving air, or wind, to turn in a circular motion. Wound, an injury, or wound, something that has been turned, the past tense of wind. While much of this information is important in the written language, it's also fundamental to your acquiring better skills when it comes to the spoken word. If you hear one of these words spoken and need to take time out of your listening, trying to decide what it means, you're also losing vital listening time for other portions of the conversation. In fact, in doing that, you may be missing the most important parts of the conversation. Chapter 9, Contractions in the English Language. One thing you've undoubtedly discovered about the English language is its apparent randomness. As soon as you learn a grammatical rule or a way to pronounce a word, you discover at least one exception to the rule. There you are, thinking you were making progress. Now, you're only left confused. While it may not make you feel any better, but everyone who learns this language has the same problems. We've already mentioned, even native speakers have encountered these same problems, and some of them have never fully conquered them. One of the idiosyncrasies of the English language, and one that seems to confuse many students, is the contraction. Students and native speakers alike have problems knowing when to use them and when not to. Some individuals have problems knowing what the contraction even stands for. If you're having these problems, or try to avoid speaking with contractions for fear of making a fool of yourself, join the club. But now, we're going to give you a quick course in this unique part of the English language. Before you've completed this chapter, you'll be not only using contractions like a native speaker, but you'll know exactly why and how you're using them. What is a contraction anyway? In its basic form, a contraction is a shortened form of a word or two words. It's created in its most common written form by an omitted letter or letters and replacing them with an apostrophe. Contractions are normally used in spoken English. Not always found in the written language, a contraction represents syllables that have been dropped by native speakers because on the whole, they speak fast and simply compress the words together. One of the ones you've probably encountered frequently is can't for cannot. You may already be using this one and a few others. They are, after all, a more informal way to speak, and they actually make you sound more like a native speaker. You're less likely to find them in the written language, except in some informally written books, like this one, whose writing style is to sound more conversational. Essentially, English uses two types of contractions. The first variety is the type we've just defined, in which one or more letters are missing and replaced by an apostrophe. The list below contains a comprehensive list of contractions you may hear people speak, but it's not necessarily complete. These contractions have been used for hundreds of years and agreed upon, as it were, by speakers of the English language. Due to the possibility of being misunderstood, it's widely accepted in the spoken language that individuals don't randomly create their own set of contractions. While these words are definitely the informal presentation of two words, they are widely accepted by linguists. Below are many contractions and the words they represent. Aren't, are not, can't, cannot, couldn't, could not, didn't, did not, doesn't, does not, don't, do not, hadn't, had not, hasn't, has not, haven't, have not, heed, he had, he would, he'll, he will, he shall, he's, he is, he has, I'd, I had, I would, I'll, I will, I shall, I'm, I am, I've, I have, isn't, is not, it's, it is, it has, let's, let us, mustn't, must not, shan't, shall not, she'd, she had, she would, she'll, she will, she shall, she's, she is, she has, shouldn't, should not, that's, that is, that has, theirs, there is, there has, they'd, they had, they would, they'll, they will, they shall, there, they are, they've, they have, we'd, we had, we would, we're, we are, we've, we have, weren't, were not, what'll, what will, what shall, what'er, what are, what's, what is, what has, what've, what have, where's, where is, where has, who'd, who had, who would, who'll, who will, who shall, who'er, who are, who's, who is, who has, who've, who have, won't, will not, wouldn't, would not, you'd, you had, you would, you'll, you will, you shall, you're, you are, you've, you have, you aren't, you are not. There's technically one other form of contraction, even though few people ever refer to it as such. That's the contractions that English uses in front of full names to identify gender or occupation. In these cases, only a few letters of the original word is used, and when writing them, English rules state you place a period at the end. They should cause you absolutely no problem when you're speaking the language. Just be aware of the pronunciation if you read any material aloud in your daily practice. M.R. period, Mr. M.R.S. period, Mistress or Mrs. DR, period, doctor. ATTY, period, attorney. REV, period, reverend. Learning contractions will go a long way in helping you speak the English language more fluently. In fact, once you feel comfortable and confident using them, as well as understanding others who use them, you'll be well on your way to speaking the language like a native. Conclusion. At this point of the book, you may be tempted to say that you've finished reading about breaking through to the new level of fluency in the English language, and you've certainly completed the reading portion of this vital journey. However, you're far from completing your journey. In one of the most vital ways, you've only just begun. Now that you know what it takes to learn how to reach that breakthrough level of the spoken English language, there will be no stopping you. You're beginning your journey of submerging yourself in English, taking up the challenge of speaking it whenever and wherever you can. Congratulations! You've made a wise decision to continue to work toward your goals and not allowing anything to hold you back. Armed with the guidelines, suggestions, tips, and techniques in this book, and your own personal study and speaking habits that have been successful for you, you'll discover great success. If your goal is to get a promotion at work, you can rest assured you'll be one of the prime candidates. If your goal is to earn better grades in school, you'll discover the aid in this book will provide you with the foundation you need. Or perhaps you're learning English simply because your children are beginning to learn it in school. In any case, it's a skill that will be most vital to your future. There are as many reasons for learning the English language as there are individuals using it. Regardless of your reason for learning it, you'll discover that once you put your mind to it, you'll have no problem. If, any time along your journey, you feel as if you can't take another step or don't know how to go any further, simply open this book again and begin referring to it. Haven't been shadowing like you used to? Perhaps that's why you should be doing it once again to break through to yet another level of fluency. Sometimes we get so involved in the day-to-day activities of life that we forget to spend the time on goals that mean a lot to us. Sometimes we lose the ardor and excitement we had when we first started the project. If you believe that this is happening to you, why not just review one more time why you wanted to speak English in the first place? Review with yourself why you wanted to speak it as if it were your first language. Of course, it's natural to feel a bit frustrated by the brick wall you seem to have hit if you feel as if you're not progressing in your pursuit. This is the perfect time to refer to your SMART goals again. When you read over these again, try to capture the excitement you felt when you originally wrote them. Hopefully, the goals were internally stimulated. That means you created them because you felt deeply serious about pursuing them for your own reasons. If your reasons were because others were telling you that this was what you should be doing, then it will be more difficult to recapture the magic that you initially felt. Even if they were externally stimulated, chances are you felt so confident while learning the language that you adapted these goals as an internal challenge for yourself. Here are two tips to help you stay with the program, as the English idiom goes. You've already set your SMART goals. Initially, it really didn't matter the language. But now, use both languages, but don't stop there. From these goals, create what many would call a vision board. Remember earlier in the book, we used the goal of being able to give a presentation at work? Write this goal out and then find a photo of a boardroom or an office to represent the presentation and the desire to progress in your career. If your desire was to keep up with your children's increasing knowledge of the English language which they are learning at school, then take a photo of them and put it next to that goal. You get the idea. Doing just this will revitalize you. But then, how do you maintain this excitement? Make sure you place these boards in a location in which you can see them, even briefly, on a daily basis. Each time you do see it, repeat your goal out loud. You may even want to stop for a moment and reflect on what this goal means, not only to you, but to your entire family. Imagine how proud your children will be of you, for example, when you visit their teachers on the next parent-teacher conference day, speaking like a native speaker. Imagine how your career will soar when you improve your English enough to actually, in front of your supervisors and colleagues, talk about the project in English. Want to go that extra step with reminders? Why not take advantage of the current state of technology and set daily or periodic reminders on your phone of what your true goals are in your studies? If you reflect at least once daily at a specific time every day, you'll be keeping these goals in your consciousness. In this way, you'll be less likely to get depressed over your studies and more likely to stay enthusiastic and centered. Well done. Look at how far you've come since you took your first step. Remember to have a consistent English practice schedule every day. Keep up the good work. Before you know it, you'll be speaking fluent English like a native. Thank you for reading English Fluency for Advanced English Speaker. If you find this book helpful, please take some time to share your thoughts and post a review on Amazon. It'd be greatly appreciated. Remember, immersion is the key to learn any language. If you find yourself thinking in English, you are on the right track. I wish you the best and good luck. Whitney Nelson. This has been English Fluency for Advanced English Speaker, How to Unlock the Full Potential to Speak English Fluently, written by Whitney Nelson, narrated by Carissa Clark Howe. Copyright 2016 by Tzu-Kin Lee. Production copyright 2016 by Tzu-Kin Lee.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.